I mean, this whole argument about cultural value actually does relate, I think John and I should acknowledge, to a work by a man called Mark Moore, who wrote a book in America called Creating Public Value.
Yeah.
And actually, it's always worth quoting what Mark Moore said, which was that as people begin to use a different language to describe what they do, they tend to change what they see and do. And so what we're doing with cultural value is, by creating this new language, we're actually hoping to change the way that the arts, culture, and indeed many other social goods are approached in this country.
Hello, my name's Charlie Timms, and this is a Demos podcast. And today I'm joined by John Holden and Robert Hewson, who both work on issues around culture and cultural institutions. Have been doing so now for nearly 4 years.
In
2005 you published Capturing Cultural Value, which is followed up in 2007 by Cultural Value and the Crisis of Legitimacy, and
2006 actually.
Is that 2006?
Yeah, it's 2006.
This we also Robert published Sanders. Not yeah. a Sideshow, Leadership and Cultural Value.
And all these reports, I guess, have one common element within them, and that is the concept of cultural value, which has had considerable traction with cultural institutions in and around the UK and has travelled across the world. And today, I guess we're going to talk around that concept and about the position of cultural institutions in relation to politicians, professionals, and the wider public. So, the title of the second pamphlet is Cultural Value and the Crisis of Legitimacy. Is it cultural institutions that face a crisis of legitimacy? And if they do face one, why do they face a crisis?
Right. Well, they do face a crisis of legitimacy. And the reason for that is that for about the past 30 years, they've had to justify what they do almost solely in terms of the sort of instrumental benefits that culture can generate, be that in economic terms under Mrs. Thatcher, or social goods under Blair. So you find that typically the forms that cultural institutions have to fill in for their funders, actually sometimes private sector funders as well as public sector funders, have been around issues of social cohesion, community building, economic regeneration, all those kinds of things.
And indeed how a museum can prevent crime.
Yeah, indeed. So what's happened is that there's developed a very kind of closed conversation between the funding bodies and the cultural institutions, which neglects the real reasons why people actually value culture, which is for all those fantastic, magical experiences that, that culture gives them. So the crisis of legitimacy seems to me that the public has been left out of this kind of conversation, and the way to solve it is to bring the public back into that conversation, to have a much greater role and a much more dynamic relationship with their cultural institutions.
So if cultural institutions face a crisis of legitimacy, what can they do about it?
So what we've done is we've created this kind of conceptual framework to try to articulate the three main categories of value, which shouldn't be seen as sort of differences. They should be seen as different lenses of looking at what's going on in a cultural encounter. And those three types of value are, firstly, intrinsic value, by which we mean all the emotional, spiritual, numinous values that accrue to culture. In fact, the real reason, the real things that make it special. The instrumental values, because they do actually exist in terms of generating tourist income and so on and so forth. And a third category that we've called institutional value. And this really relates to the fact that culture is perhaps the main place where people engage voluntarily with public life and the public sector, thus giving cultural institutions a huge opportunity as creators of a good society to create things like a sense of fairness, a sense of equity, a space where people can gather and intermingle in quite different terms from the way that they can in a commercial space. So the way that cultural institutions do what they do then becomes very, very important. So we've got those three things: intrinsic, institutional, instrumental.
Though, of course, institutional value is actually created or destroyed by any kind of organisation. I mean, we happen to be sitting here in a pub. It's very nice, the service is nice, and so on. The institution is adding value to our experience by making, we hope it, a pleasant experience to be here. The white wine's a little warm, but, you know, it is actually adding value to our experience by the way this institution is relating to its publics. And actually, it's terribly important, particularly for cultural institutions who have become, A, distracted by the drive to meet instrumental targets, and B, because they have also a certain arrogance in their sense of expertise. We know what the public want, and so on. What institutional value does is try to reconfigure that relationship between the public and the institution. And if you get that relationship right, then there is no crisis of legitimacy, because the people see, yes, sure, I think it's right that people should fund this institution, indeed, whether they themselves enjoy that institution or not.
Hello, my name's Charlie Timms, and I'm discussing cultural value with John Holton and Robert Hewison. If we could go back to the original question, so it seems from what you're saying that if cultural institutions face a crisis of legitimacy, is that a crisis of legitimacy in the government's eyes? Or in the public side? It seems like you were kind of saying that it's about they can't legitimise themselves to their political classes, because, I mean, we know, presumably from the statistics, that more people you know, are going to cultural institutions and taking part in them in different ways than ever before.
Yeah, indeed. 94% of the population take part in the arts and sports. 74% go and visit museums. These are hugely high numbers. So, yeah, it is, but the extraordinary thing is that in spite of that enormous public engagement with culture, it hasn't got the same kind of legitimacy in the political world as does education or defence
or
anything
or
else you
sport.
Care to name, really, or even sport.
Yeah. I mean, it's the old McKinsey formula. What gets measured gets managed. And, of course, the point about cultural experience, which we experience culture individually, fundamentally. It's what happens in our hearts and in our souls, our spirits. These things are very, very hard to measure. I mean, bums on seats, well, you can see how wide they are, you can count how many of them are, but that still doesn't actually reflect the experience and the essential enjoyment of culture.
Politics usually talks in terms of delivering benefits. You know, you've got something quantifiable that you give to people. In culture, it's a value because it's something that you give to the experience. A politician, or you or me, can't tell you that you've benefited from a cultural experience. Only you can put a value on it.
It seems like much of this is about democratising and diversifying the way the cultural institutions talk about the things that they do. And it seems that if there is a crisis of legitimacy, and if we are going to get away from it, then talking in those different ways to different audiences is going to help those institutions. But is there anything that cultural institutions need to do differently as well, or is it simply about explaining and describing their value differently? Do you see what I mean?
No, it's not just about explaining and describing. It's about engaging with your public, about valuing their own input into your programming, into the interpretation of the objects that you've got, in providing them with ways to find out a lot more about things, like having, you know, the Sage in Gateshead, for example, has got the Gateshead Music Library inside it, so that people can find a way to get recordings or where to read about the composers, all those kinds of things. It's about understanding what your public wants and helping them to stretch them, to grow them, but to respect them, not think that you have all the answers.
You know, one of the problems with cultural institutions, they're often perceived as arrogant and elitist. Now, if you engage with your public in the right way, then of course you share your expert knowledge with them, but at the same time you actually relate to them in a positive and creative way. And that's how you create institutional value, for instance.
But when push comes to shove, cultural institutions to varying degrees are relying on the public purse. And presumably, you know, that is a finite resource.
Well, the point is, the cultural value framework does not exclude either the instrumental benefits created by economic activity or indeed social activity. What it does do is set that beside the other effects, which are the if you like, the emotional, the personal effects which culture has. What we're doing is trying to put something back into that choice. And in fact, probably, I mean, my view, having talked to a few politicians about this, is that they themselves realize that actually most of their decisions may appear to be taken on completely rational economic grounds. They're not. They're political decisions. Once you've got politics into it, then you've got social values in the equation. And what cultural value does is try to put in an articulate way of doing it.
So what cultural value is trying to do is put not a tick box, not a formulaic approach, but a framework that includes all the things that people need to talk about when they're taking that decision. But that taking that decision still depends on experience, expertise, professionalism, and so on.
Hello, my name's Charlie Timms, and I'm a researcher at Demos, and I've been discussing cultural value with John Holman and Robert Hewison. This was a Demos podcast. All the reports that we've been discussing in this podcast are downloadable for free from the Demos website.